Well, as we get started this morning, I want you to just consider some hypothetical scenarios. Say you see a woman who's wearing a very nice dress, and you say, wow, what a lovely dress. And then she responds, oh, it's not much. I found it in a bin at Goodwill. It's just nothing fancy, right? But that doesn't change the fact that it is a beautiful dress and that you want to compliment her in that. Or suppose several women get together and they throw a bridal shower for one of their friends, and the girl refuses, and she says, well, I'm really not worthy of all that time and attention. Well, really, that wasn't her decision either, right? But that's her response. Or suppose the congregation all chips in to buy one of the hardworking elders a gift certificate somewhere, and when presented with it, he declines. You know, I wonder what kind of message that sends to the group that went through that trouble to do that. Or to someone who's very capable, has some very capable skills there. You have great talent, you say to them. And they say, well, no, I'm just an average person. There's really nothing special about me. Or suppose there's a Christian man who lives his life in shame and regret because of his sins, but he feels unworthy and undeserving and unfit for God's grace. You know, in all of these scenarios here, they all have one thing in common. We've got people that don't know how to receive a gift. It's really what it comes down to. They don't know how to properly receive a gift, whether that gift is from other people or from God himself. They just don't know how to do that. That doesn't mean they'll never know how or that they can't know how, just that presently they just don't know how to do that properly. There's no need to downgrade the gift or the compliment just because you feel shy or embarrassed about all the attention. When you minimize what someone else does for you, then you make them feel like they're wasting their time and their gifts because you don't appreciate them. Likewise, there's no need to downgrade yourself because you don't feel deserving. The fact is, if they are gifts, then you are not really deserving of them at all. They are given freely, they are given without you having to justify them, and they're given without need of repayment. One of the neat things about gifts is that they don't come with an invoice, right? I mean, someone is giving you something, and you are really to receive that graciously. Well, just because Christians are expected to give gifts doesn't mean that fellow Christians have no responsibility in the manner in which to receive them. In fact, as I'll point out later in the lesson, you may think that you're being all humble and so on, but actually it comes across as being ungrateful, even rude, and unnecessary. The fact is, Christians are receiving gifts all the time. We're receiving gifts from other Christians, we're receiving gifts from non-Christians, from the natural world, and all of these from God himself. And there's nothing wrong with this. God showers us with blessings, showers us with gifts because we are his children, and of course because we need those things. And so there's a great privilege that comes with that, or that comes with being a Christian, I should say, and yet with privilege comes responsibility. We need to be gracious receivers as well as gracious givers. So how we receive gifts, then, can be just as important as how we give them. And just as I mentioned last week, sometimes we struggle, or some people struggle, with the giving part. Now we're looking at the other side of that and say, well, some people struggle with the receiving part, and that's just the way it is. And yet both parties can learn how to do better, whether as givers or receivers. It doesn't matter what you've done up to this point. We're really looking at going from here forward. In order to receive something, really anything, there has to be a place to put it, okay? Has someone ever handed you something and you had no hands to take that? You know, your hands are full of groceries or kids or whatever else, and they're handing you something. It's like, I can't do that. You're going to have to put it down or put it somewhere else or give it to someone else there. So in order to receive something, you have to have a place to put it, a ready receptacle, an opening, a sufficient room. For example, you can't receive someone into your home if you keep the door locked, or if you literally have no room in your house, or if you have no home. Likewise, you can't receive a compliment if you have a poor self-image or poor self-respect. There's no place for the gift. And likewise, you cannot receive any gift into your heart if your heart is already filled with something else, say, pride or false humility. There's got to be room for the gift. In order to properly receive something, you have to have an open heart. You have to have an open mind. And yes, you have to have open arms. And furthermore, many of God's gifts come by way of his servants. the gift givers, if you will, whom he has blessed in order that they might bless you. I dare to say, every single one of us in this congregation has been blessed by other Christians. Every single one of us. Now, many of you, thankfully, have already turned around and blessed others as well. Maybe not the people that blessed you, that's not the point. But you've learned the lesson God has given you so that you might give to others. And we all participate in that on both sides of the equation. And we should recognize, of course, that all gifts do come from God himself, whether spiritual in nature or physical. All gifts are a form of God's grace. I don't mean saving grace in every case. Okay? Saving grace is very specific to salvation, but certainly God's graciousness is manifested in the fact that he gives gifts to all people in all kinds of different forms. In James chapter 1, verse 17, it just says, every good thing given, every perfect gift is from above, from the Father of lights, in whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. All gifts that benefit us, including the compliments, the demonstrations of kindness, the words of encouragement, the gestures of hospitality, these are all things that God bestows upon us, gives to us freely at one time or another, and usually when we need them the most. So when we come into Christ, when we become Christians, God begins sending gifts our way. I'm not saying he hasn't gifted you until then, but he sends special gifts once you become one of the family, if you will. And he does so in the form of necessities, which we call providence, but also in the form of other people or helpful information or words or teachings or guidance. You might even consider this lesson as a gift of sorts in that, you know, it's being given to you freely. And it's hopefully meant to encourage you and to inform you to do better than what any of us might have been doing up until now. So we ought never to think lightly of those kinds of gifts, the blessings that he chooses to impart. We ought never to tell God that he was wrong to have given us that gift by shunning the gift and say, oh, no, I'm not worthy, or no, really, I don't need that. Who are we to tell God, who graciously gave us these gifts, that he was wrong to have given them in the first place? And yet, this is something that you do run into a lot, I think, because people are cognizant of their unworthiness, their inadequacy, the shame of their own poor decisions, the shame that they are sinners, the shame that they're not perfect. I'm human. I understand what that feels like. I feel those feelings of inadequacy and unworthiness, too. I feel them probably like you do. So say someone says, well, I'm just not worthy of the gift. My response is kind of ironic. I usually come back and say, you're absolutely right. You are not worthy of this gift. But the gift is not being given to you because you're worthy of it. The gift is being given to you because of the graciousness of the giver. Because someone wants to give something to you here. And so there's a difference here. The whole concept of the gift thing, gift-giving thing, is not because you're worthy, but because someone is choosing to give something to you that you didn't have before. Not out of the unworthiness, or the worthiness, I should say, of your heart, but because of the worthiness, really, of their intention. There's a difference between saying, I'm not worthy, but I appreciate the gift, and saying, I'm not worthy, so I refuse the gift. One is an act of humility. The other really is an act of pride, because a heart filled with pride has no room to receive the gift. True humility means making room in one's heart for the many gifts that God provides in whatever way he wants to provide them. And pride is all about closing one's heart to that gift or to his gifts, and it implies that you really don't need what he has to offer, or you don't really want what he has to offer. And what you're really saying is you dishonor the one who gives you the gift. Not just the individual himself or herself, but God himself. So giving is all about self-sacrifice. We talked about that last week. But receiving is also about self-sacrifice. You have to sacrifice your pride. Okay? When someone gives you a gift, it may not be as comfortable for you to receive that gift, but you want to sacrifice your pride and think about the reason why it's being given, the one who's giving it, and then God who blesses all of us. This is not a license to be greedy. This is an opportunity for gratitude. The heart that doesn't receive God's gifts is just as sinful as the heart that doesn't give gifts to others, because both of these are exercises in unbelief. Any resistance of God's will on either side of the situation there is a form of unbelief. Now, think about what I just said. Any resistance of God's will is a form or manifestation of unbelief. So when you're resisting God's will, if indeed you're doing that, or when I resist God's will, what you and I are doing there, most regrettably, is we are resisting God. We're saying, no, I know that you, God, meant this for good for me, but I think otherwise. I decline the offer. I think, well, I didn't want to say it, but you're wrong. Okay? You made a mistake. You meant for good, but really, my version of good is better than what you intended for me. Think about how that comes out. Think how offensive that sounds to the giver of all good gifts. But the heart which is prepared to receive much, God will fill that heart up, and that heart will overflow, because God always gives an abundance. I'm always reminded of that passage in Luke chapter 6 where he talks about give and it will be given to you, shaken down, pressed down, you know, flowing, overflowing, and so on. In other words, if you're a giver, then you're also going to be a receiver, a healthy receiver, okay? That God is going to give you much because you have a heart that wants to receive those gifts. We've said before, God loves a cheerful giver, but he also loves gracious receivers. And the more we have to receive, well, then that just means the more we have to give. And we're better prepared to give those things, because you can't give what you don't have. So just think about this little short list we're going to go through here. If you are really good at giving good advice, you realize that in order to give good advice, you really have to be a receiver of good advice first. Because you're not the repository of all good advice in the world, unless, of course, you've received some really good information up front. I want you to just think about that. A Christian will not truly learn how to give good advice as a gift until he learns how to receive it. Likewise, a Christian will not truly learn how to give compliments until he learns how to receive them. I'm not talking about flattery. I'm talking about honesty. I'll talk about flattery in a few minutes here and why that just doesn't work. A Christian will not truly learn how to give to this congregation until he learns that this congregation is at first a gift to him. Just think about that. That we talk sometimes about, you know, giving to the congregation or giving to the Lord's work, and you've got to understand that the congregation or the Lord's work really is a gift to you first, that you have to receive that in order to give to that. A Christian will not truly learn or want to share the message of the gospel with others until he realizes that this is itself a priceless gift that he himself has received. Why would you want to share something that you don't have? You can't share the gospel until you've received it. And I'm not just talking about information here, like, you know, scriptures and verses. I'm talking about really what it is that God has given to you. You really have nothing to give until you've received that. So the reception is necessary. It's very important. And a Christian will not truly learn how to give himself or herself to others until he learns how to receive that Spirit of God from God himself. And having received that, that brings him to a higher level of understanding and appreciation and awareness and, yes, godly love. When you take that in, when you take the Spirit of God in, when you take his word in, when you take the gift in, that changes you. It transforms you. It makes you now a better giver to other people. But remember, you've got to receive that first. And you've got to open up your heart to receive that. Okay? You can't just hand God a thimble and say, here you go, fill it up. Okay? That's not good enough. You need to be open-armed in your reception of God's gifts and understand that even if you had your arms wide open, he's got far more to give you than you can handle. That's the kind of God that we serve. That's not the kind of God that is often portrayed out in the world or even in other religions. That is the God of the Bible. That is the God that we serve, a God who wants to give much to us. But sometimes what we give him is poor reception. This is an interesting thing because we don't really use reception the same way that we used to. Anyone here remember the rabbit ears on the TV? Okay, you don't understand that in order to get a TV, we had three channels you could get, maybe five if you lived outside of the trees. But what you did is you put the rabbit ears, a little antenna, on the TV, and you all sit there, and you get back and look at the TV, and then you sit there and you move it around until you got just the right reception. Now, if it sounds like I'm talking about I came from a different planet, you're just not old enough, all right? But this is how we used to get stations before there was cable and, Wi-Fi and all that sort of thing. And so if you had poor reception, well, then you understood that you just didn't get to watch anything there. So this poor reception really comes across in a number of different contexts. We can talk about TV signals, we can talk about radio frequencies, but we can talk about it in a little less digital way or less electronic way here, and then we can talk about the poor reception of a host to his guests, or the poor reception of good advice, or the poor reception of an audience. Jesus faced that a number of times where he would preach and he got very poor reception. Sometimes Christians have poor reception of God's gifts, and they think that they're being humble, but really they're being harmful. And we rob ourselves of joy and the benefits and the increase to be gained by way of such gifts. God is giving us gifts not so that we can go, okay, thank you, God, and go through some kind of laborious response there, but so that, as I said earlier, we can be transformed. And we can be filled with all these good things. We can be filled with joy. Sometimes people get up here when we're talking about the offering, and thankfully you guys are pretty good about this, the guys who have been doing it. But I've heard it many times over the years, getting up here and talking about the offering and almost making us feel guilty about, how wealthy we are. And as I said last week, I don't feel guilty. I don't feel guilty about being blessed. Is there a certain amount of unworthiness I feel when God blesses me? Of course. I feel unworthy of those gifts personally. I feel inadequate personally. But I don't feel that I want to rob myself of the joy and the benefit that God has chosen to give to me through those gifts. And neither should you. We're taught as Christians not to begrudge the gifts. We're told to be not begrudging as givers, but also not as receivers. Okay? So it's very important that we not give God this poor reception if he's giving you something intended for good. If we are commanded to give, then by necessity, it demands that someone else receive. If you think about it, we can't all be givers and then not have receivers. So we need to give, and we also need to receive. We all participate in this. And I can't think of a better example than Jesus himself. Jesus received many gifts during his lifetime, specifically during his ministry. And the thing is that he didn't need a single one of them. I mean, he is, after all, the king of all things and the Lord of the universe, and he is the Son of God, and if he needed something, well, then he just asked his Father and he would get it that way, okay, or just produce it himself through the power that he had. But he knew how important it was to participate in the process of giving and receiving among people. And so Jesus received gifts. He received loaves of bread and fish needed to feed multitudes of people. You realize he could have just produced those himself? I mean, he could have just said, let there be bread and let there be fish. And he could have just provided that and then duplicated that, multiplied that, however he wanted to. But he didn't. He asked for those gifts and he received them. He received money from others in support of his ministry. We're told in Luke 8, verse 3, that several of the women, for example, some of the wealthier women, contributed to finance his ministry. But you also can read in Matthew 17 where he's talking with Peter and he says, go put your hook out in the water there, and the fish that you bring up, you're going to find a shekel there, and that money, I want you to give that to the temple for you and me. In other words, he produced this money out of nothing. He could have done that then, and he did do that then, rather, and he could have done that at any time. Didn't need the money, but he did appreciate the gift. Jesus received praise from the Jews as he entered Jerusalem, even though he personally was rebuked by the Pharisees. He received the anointment of perfume from Mary, which Randy had read for us in John chapter 12, there 1 through 8. And then Jesus defended her. Just think about this. Did he could have produced his own burial anointment there, if you will. He didn't need to have someone else do that per se, but here's a woman who gave this to him as a gift, and Jesus didn't say, oh, no, that's, I don't need that, thank you very much, I'll take care of it. No, he accepted the gift graciously. And he received invitations by sinners to eat with them and speak to them and to provide opportunity for them to receive him. His father recognized all of this because three times specifically during his ministry, he said, "This is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased." Now just think about what happened there. Jesus is receiving gifts, and the father comes and says, "I'm well pleased with that." Well, what do you think we should be doing then? We should be receiving gifts because that's what God wants us to do. Again, I'm not talking about being greedy and expecting gifts and looking for more once you've gotten something. I'm talking about, in our humility, receiving gifts the way that we're supposed to. As Jesus received, so can we. We cannot think that we are above the gift or above receiving the gift or as if the gift is not good enough. That's pride speaking. Nor can we think that we are below the gift, like we are not good enough. Well, that's offensive to the giver. We need to learn how to do this properly. And as I said earlier, when we refuse those gifts, we rob ourselves, but we also rob the giver of an opportunity to take care of our needs. Christians should be generous, hospitable, and charitable, and that means they must allow an opportunity to express that and not deny that. What I mean by that, of course, is what we're going to talk about in just a minute, that there has to be people to receive our gifts, and there has to be fellow Christians as well as others. Someone says, well, yeah, I don't have a problem with gift giving. It's just give it to someone else, right? I mean, why give it to me? My response is, well, why not? What's wrong with giving it to you? Is God mistaken? Am I mistaken by gifting you something if that's what I'm doing? Did God bless you by accident? How would you feel if your gift was rejected and refused? I mean, think about it. If you had a nice gift you wanted to give to someone, they said, no thanks. How does that make you feel? And how do you make others feel if you're doing the same thing to them? Suppose you're one of those people that likes to visit people in the hospital, and that's a good thing to do. There's a ministry in itself. It's just going to the hospital or the care facilities that we have around here, and you go visit those people. You realize you're seeing them in their worst state of being, right? In their worst condition. Usually the women don't have their makeup on, their hair's not done. The guys, well, they're just unshaven and, you know, kind of frumpy looking. And I'm not saying this to be me. I just, you know, I've been there. I know what it's like. So suppose you're one of those people. You go there and you see these people and they're kind of embarrassed by their situation and their appearance and everything. But you feel like you're doing a great thing. You're actually giving a gift to them, and you are. Now suppose you're the one that has to go in for surgery, and you don't tell anyone that you're going in. Well, first of all, because you're acting all humble, right? As that's what you think anyway. And then secondly, you just don't want them to see you in that poor state of being. Okay, what have you just done? You just robbed everyone of an opportunity to do what you thought was so freely given on your part. So it's okay when you do it. It's not okay for others. That's what just came out of all that. Okay? And that's not the way that it should be there. That's pride at work. That's not humility. That's just pride. You're denying someone else an opportunity to do what you did. You knew that what you did was good, and yet you're denying the same opportunity for someone else. Now, just take that principle and apply that across the board to whatever else. If you're one of those people that likes to bring food to others, great. That's a great gift. That's a ministry in itself. But if you're one of those that refuses food because you just want to take care of things yourself when you're in need, well, that's pride. That's pride talking, okay? When people hand you gifts, you shouldn't allow your pride to stand in the way. That's something that needs to be sacrificed. Not the gift, not the giver. You're not sacrificing those. You're sacrificing your own pride. Because you're failing to participate in what God has told you is important. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 12 and 13, it says, "We request of you, brethren, that you appreciate those who diligently labor among you and have charge over you in the Lord and give you instruction." Most likely this is elders that he's referring to, but the principle can extend to any hard workers. "And that you esteem them very highly in love because of their work. Live in peace with one another. Esteem them, the hardworking, very highly in love because of what they're doing. This is not just a suggestion. This is an apostolic instruction. This is an apostle of Christ telling you how you and I are to conduct ourselves in the presence of a hard-working elder, or in a general sense, any hard-working Christian. You are to esteem them highly because of what they're doing. You're to give them gifts. And those who are hard-working have to receive that esteem here in the right and proper way. Otherwise, we're not just standing in the way of the process, but we're also being disobedient to the command. Well, I get back to my elder scenario that I gave in the opening illustration. Suppose we give a gift to an elder here for his hard work, and he says, "Oh no, I just can't accept that. I don't feel like that. That's something that, you know, I deserve," or whatever reason that he offers. Well, but we're supposed to esteem you. We're told in the Bible to esteem you, and you've been hardworking. We're trying to show you our respect for you and our gratitude, and you're turning around and making us feel like a bunch of heels for doing what we're doing. So who's really standing in the way here? Well, it's not us in that case. It would be the elder himself that's standing in the way. When we are told to honor such men, it's discouraging and disappointing when they refuse to accept that, or women, if they are among the hardworking there. There's nothing wrong with just simply saying, "Thank you. You're very kind. I'm honored by your words or by your gesture. And if you need to add this on there, but I'm going to give all glory to God," well, so be it. Because God is the giver of all good things, and then you know that everything comes full circle back to God anyway, right? Even God says that. "My words don't come from me and then back to me without performing what I have intended them to do." That's out of Isaiah chapter 55. And so you think about that, that God is telling you that straight up, that yeah, my gifts are going to come back to me in one way or the other, but they should come back to me through you giving him the glory for those things. Well, honestly, we can't expect gifts just because we desire them. That ruins the context and the whole purpose, and that sheds a very negative light on this whole holiday season there. There's a lot of people just wanting gifts because it's a gift-giving season rather than context and purpose. You can't expect a nice gift just for everything that every good deed that you do, for example, right? I mean, you can't do a good deed and then look around going, "Who's going to gift me now?" who watched that? Who saw that? Maybe I'll get something for that. But then you might say, "Well, we Christians, we receive or we expect God's gifts," and the reason I would respond to that and say, "Well, that's because God has promised them. It's not because we demanded them. It's not because we insisted upon them. And it's not because we're entitled to them. It's because God promised those gifts." That would be the appropriate answer to that. There's some gifts that do not originate from God, but rather from selfish motives. And they're not worth receiving, and therefore we ought not to receive them. And one of those gifts, of course, as I mentioned earlier, is flattery. Flattery is false praise that is given in order to gain a personal advantage of some kind. It's an improper gift. It is really promoted by evil motives, and we need to refuse any flattery. Secondly, when we know that gift is some kind of manipulation, as in to buy our silence, or to buy our friendship, or to buy our support, this is a form of extortion or some kind of bribery, depends how you look at that. Okay, those are gifts that are really not worth receiving because the motive is really wicked and not righteous. Ill-gotten gifts, which are acquired through criminal or unscrupulous acts by way of deception, through injury or harm or malice towards someone else, etc., etc. Okay? In other words, how was the gift obtained? If someone just stole a nice watch out of a jewelry store and I knew about this and then they try to give me that watch, I don't look at that and go, "Wow, thank you very much. All glory to God." You know, I can't do that. I mean, that's just a perversion of the entire gift-giving and receiving process. In Deuteronomy 23:18, in the law, it says, "You shall not bring the hire of a harlot or the wages of a dog, dog is a male prostitute, by the way, into the house of the Lord your God for any votive or vow offering. For both of these are an abomination to the Lord your God. So what he's saying is any profit that is derived through any illicit means, don't go bringing that profit to me and offering it to me as a gift because it's offensive to him. And it should be offensive to us too in that case, under those circumstances, when someone has stolen something or acquired it through some illicit means and then wants to give it to us. And then gifts tainted with worldliness or that jeopardize our reputation. We can't accept those kinds of gifts because, well, they're worldly and they jeopardize our reputation. Under those terms, I cannot accept a subscription to Playboy, even if I am just reading the articles, okay? I can't accept a fifth of whiskey from someone or a box of cigars or an invitation to a nightclub or a strip joint. And quite frankly, any Willie Nelson CDs, I just cannot accept those because I do have a reputation to maintain, okay? I threw that out there just in case. All right. So all this means, this whole lesson is about this, that there is a certain responsibility that is attached to receiving gifts. And we need to exercise discretion. We need to exercise wisdom. We can't just blindly receive the gift because we're so blinded by the thrill of receiving the gift himself. Okay? Suppose a brother offers you $1,000, for example, to look the other way, and you're thinking, wow, isn't this ironic? I need $1,000 to pay my medical bill, and you take that as a gift from God. That's not from God. God will gift you whatever he needs to in his own right and proper way. He's not going to use illicit means to benefit you. And if it is illicit means that is benefiting you, then that gift is not from God. It's from a different source, and you need to know that. There's a final aspect to consider in our lesson, and that is that when God blesses you with gifts, whether through mentors and encouragers or preachers, the church, the gospel, his son, his own spirit, he expects you to be, as I said earlier, personally transformed and not remain the same person, or even worse, go backward, reverse direction, into becoming less gracious and less grateful. There's a passage in Hebrews that you ought to read on your own, and it talks there about how God provides many gifts to those who have heard the word, and those who have heard the word, of course, are Christians. That's the context that he's talking. This whole letter is written to Christians. It's not written to unbelievers, but to believers. But look at what he says here. Those who have been enlightened, those who have tasted the heavenly gift, those are Christians that have done this. And all those good things. And then, verse 6, have fallen away. Here's someone who's taken all the good gifts of God. And then he repels them or just dismisses them or turns away from them. It says that they again crucify to themselves the Son of God, put him to open shame. And then he starts talking about this rain, which often falls and brings forth vegetation. Well, this rain in the context here really refers to all those good gifts that God has given us. Consider that as rain. I know you're thinking, oh, we got a little bit too much rain here lately, and that's not a good thing. No, well, that's another gift from God in whatever way he intends it. The fact is, we need rain to survive. And what rain is supposed to do, ideally, is to bring forth vegetation so that we have things to grow, so we have things to eat. And the idea here, spiritually, is that God gives gifts to bring forth good fruit in those believers that are recipients of that rain or those gifts. But when that rain comes, and instead of good vegetation, all that is grown is thorns and thistles, which he goes on to say here, well, that's a bad thing. And that person is no longer blessed, but really is under a curse there. So if someone soaks up the rain without producing, in other words, without gratitude, without measurable growth, without a proper respect for the source of those gifts, then he becomes a worthless person. Not because God makes him so, and not because the rain makes him so, because he makes himself so. And that ground, as he refers to it metaphorically, ends up being burned. There's a strong warning to us. The whole point here is that God showers us with gifts and blessings and people and opportunities and teachings, not so that they can be rejected, not so that they can be minimized, and not so that we can remain the same people as when we receive them. but rather they are to be gratefully accepted, cheerfully received, because God's trying to fill our hearts with light, with love, and prosperity, and we should gratefully receive all that. Jesus says that everyone who asks receives, because God wants to give us good gifts, and we need to prepare our heart to receive those gifts. We need to receive His gifts. We need grace and mercy. We need forgiveness. We need peace. We need the promise of God. We need hope, encouragement, providence. We need spiritual strength. We need the Holy Spirit. These are all gifts for God, from God, rather. And we need to make room in our heart for the reception of all of these gifts. Remove the things that are there in your heart that are standing in the way. You've got to make room in your heart for these things. Don't allow your heart to be filled with something inferior instead. It's so easy to do. I'm speaking from experience. It's so easy to fill your heart with something less. Likewise, make room in your heart for the acts of kindness from others. You may think you're being humble if you reject the gifts or dishonor yourself, I should say, but it's really a backward form of pride. And that's a response that God didn't teach you. You came up with that on your own. In other words, the instruction is just the opposite than what you're doing. The more we receive, the more we have to give to others. But if we refuse to receive, then it implies that we don't need the gift or that we don't want it. Neither one of those is good. Remember how Jesus himself was blessed with gifts from other people, gifts he could have easily produced himself, especially since all things come from him in the first place. But he welcomed and appreciated the kindness of other people. Next time someone offers you a gift, you should do what Christ did. Just accept the gift. And whether that gift is a praise, a compliment, small token of appreciation, a meal, you know, something tangible, whatever it might be. Next time someone offers you the gift because of who you are or what you did, do not say, oh, you shouldn't have, okay? What you should say is, thank you. And then say a prayer of thanks to God that he remembered you, because that's why you got the gift. God remembered you. And he was cognizant of what you're doing. And he wants to tell you that in so many words. Someday, when we are over there, then we will see God and he'll tell us how thankful he is, how proud he is of all those who stayed faithful all their lives. But for now, what he does is he shows us his appreciation for us through the gifts that he gives to us. And those gifts are intended for our good, never for evil, never certainly for our detriment. That's our lesson this morning. I hope you take it to heart. And I hope that you do something with this. If you need to come forward this morning, this is your time. If you're ready to become a Christian this morning, most certainly we encourage you to do that. If you know what to do, you know what's required of you, you realize this is a lifelong commitment, then take that step, make that change, and obey the gospel in the way that it says to do. If you need to come forward, do so as we stand and sing the song that Richard has selected for.